Accession number 30249, reel 13.
You get noises from people higher up the chain sometimes. Everybody knows we need more helicopters, you know. I mean, I don't hear complaints about anything much, apart from this weapon problem early on. But most of the time they just make the best of a bad job and get on with it. You know.
Did you come in contact with the Americans this second tour of yours?
Not directly, no. I mean, I was aware they were around. I've come into contact with them in Iraq, which comes a bit later in the story. Mm. But
was there any sort of viewpoint expressed by the British troops you were in contact with about the Americans?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I can quote. Our military, but I mean, I know that it is said that the Americans have really good toys, but their personnel are not so hot. But that's me saying that. I'm not quoting anybody, but their technology is superb, and they're very, very well equipped. I've seen Americans behaving less than well through probably lack of training more than lack of discipline. I'm not impressed by the Americans that I've seen, but I have probably only seen Americans in the lower echelons, you know, and privates and. It just bothers me when you meet an American and you have a Union Jack, because when I have a uniform given me, it has a Union Jack on the shoulder, and then an American looks at your shoulder and asks you where the hell you're from, that really bothers me, because I think, well, we're the only ally you've got, you know, you don't know who we are, you know. That probably says something about the education of the American soldier, maybe. I have been told by certain people that if we're with the Americans and something goes wrong, make sure you're behind them and not in front of them, because they shoot first and ask questions later. So I suppose you could say they're not very popular in certain quarters.
I remember you saying, was it in Kosovo, where the Americans wouldn't come out on patrol in certain places?
Yeah, they were in a large... they built a huge fort, but weren't prepared to come out and do patrols at one stage because it was too dangerous. So what happens... is the good old Royal Marines or the Paras or somebody the equivalent goes down and does the patrols for them, you know. I suppose the Americans find it quite difficult to accept that they're going to lose people, you know. But I think by now they've probably realised they are going to lose people, because they're losing them at the moment in Iraq, you know, and lost them in Vietnam by the thousands. And never learnt a damn thing from it. At least I think the Brits generally, not the politicians, but the British military, learn their lessons. You know, certainly not our politicians, but they're. Anyway, that second trip was a great success, but there's nothing terribly exciting. Happened to me on the trip. It was a good solid trip, and I got an awful lot of material. I went back to Kabul.
Yes, I was looking at that lovely painting.
Yeah,
it must have been a beautiful building.
This is what's left of the King's Palace in Kabul.
Oh, is that what it was? The King. He's recently died. Was it a king in? Yes, the
probably. Yes, oh. Yeah. Ooh. I mean, I think he'd been living in Europe probably for many years. But yeah, I got taken to the King's Palace, and that just had to be painted, that place. Just because it's peppered with all these
it makes a
scars and
awful
holes.
Thing to say, but it makes a beautiful ruin.
Well, there's
it?
Great. We touched on this before. There's great beauty in war, as far as I'm concerned. And as an artist, the challenge of painting a building like that that's so pockmarked, it's just a really exciting thing.
It's sort of monumental,
paint.
Isn't it? That
yes.
building.
That's just one wing of it as well. That's just one
is that
wing.
So? Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
Where would the other have been? Destroyed completely?
No, it was there. I just left it out to
oh,
make.
Oh, I see. Yes.
I just honed in on this piece.
Yes.
And treated it as a building on its own, but in actual fact, it was attached to a lot more building. And I mean, to be honest, I only painted it because there are some. There were some really neat little holes drilled in it.
Mm.
They are these little round holes are the sort of signature of the rocket-propelled grenade.
Oh, really? They're so neat, aren't they?
Very neat.
Straight in.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, that'll be quite difficult to paint those holes and make them look as though they're holes that go in. It's a little painting problem.
Oh, I
so I painted
yes.
the whole thing just to work out
yes, I see
how,
what you mean.
How
yes.
I could get these little holes to work as holes, you know.
Mm. But probably that's a wonderful record, isn't it? Who knows what's going to happen
yeah.
to that building eventually. And it
that's
might,
right, yeah.
Yes,
and
it is a beautiful place.
It's quite an important building.
Yes, all that wire at the top.
Yeah, that held the roof up.
Yes.
Yeah. And a mile away is the Queen's Palace.
Oh.
Further back on the hill, but you stumble across places like this, and they just cry out to be painted.
Yes, yes. I imagine you
I
would have
really,
got a lot. Did you?
Really excited
that,
about it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was sort of the second trip gave me the sort of the softer side of it, if you like, the damage, you know, the damage to the infrastructure, and the poverty, the hardship. The people, and you know, and it get because there was less action for me, I suppose it gave me the opportunity to just take my time and look a lot closer at
yes.
you know, how the people were surviving.
Yes, there's a lovely picture behind where you're sitting, Gordon, with an Afghan man, a very handsome fellow.
Yes, he's a Northern Alliance soldier.
Yeah. A beautiful man, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean he has a wristwatch, which is probably looted off somebody or taken off a body, and he's got a folding stock AK-47.
Yes, I can see that.
Yeah.
Did he sit for you? He looks as if he is.
Yeah,
you know.
He did.
Did he
yeah.
sit for you?
They're quite. They were quite cooperative there. I mean, that was painted on, or the sketches were done on the day of our sort of our lunch out on the carpet when I got
gosh.
Ill.
I wonder you can bear. Look at that.
But they were,
yes.
I mean, because they thought a lot of us, they were quite happy to sit and be photographed or drawn or whatever, you know.
The background is very lovely of that. I think.
This pockmarked wall, you know,
yes.
with bullet holes. And bits and pieces. Technique again, it's lots of different watercolour technique on
uh-huh.
it. It gives me great pleasure to paint watercolours at that size, to paint you
yes.
know, full sheet
yes.
20 by 30 watercolour.
Mm. Yes, you were saying in the earlier interview, you know, how your technique has improved.
It's improved and broadened. And
yes, the confidence
yeah,
you've gained.
Yeah,
yes.
And it continues to do so. It continues
yes.
to develop as I am pushed further and further.
Yes.
You're all the time, you know, reaching beyond, you know.
That's right. And I would think the getting the colour right. Have we spoken? I can't. I know you have spoken to me about that painting.
Mm.
This is a lovely one.
This is in Helmand Province.
This is Helmand Province,
yeah.
isn't it? I
yeah.
don't think you've spoken about that on the record,
no,
have you?
No.
No. Would
no.
that have been done in a later trip, I
yes,
think?
Yes, this
wouldn't
is.
It? Oh, we'll come to that later.
Yes,
then.
It's 1977.
Yes, it's just the colouring, I was thinking,
yes.
the drama of.
Yeah.
of that is very striking, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, this is, for me, it's an advantage of being a landscape painter. You know, I can paint the landscape and then pop in all the other little bits.
Yes.
So
yes.
It sounds easy.
Yes, I can imagine that that is, you know, the fact that you are a professional landscape painter. Yeah. Yes.
And people, I mean, if I work for various museums, and they quite often ask for the landscape. You know, we want to see the landscape. We want to see the areas that these people are fighting in. You know.
Yes, I can see this one here. It's a very good example. Yes, isn't it? Your convoy, the tail end of the convoy.
In fact, the convoy is secondary to the lovely view, really.
Yes, you could look at that and not realise it was a war painting, couldn't you?
But that happens in war zones, you know, in war zones. Wars are quite often well spread out, and you get these large areas where there's nothing except beautiful country, you know, or the odd vehicle. Wars are not as intense as people think.
Yeah.
You get these little pockets of activity, but great areas of and time. There are great lengths of time when nothing happens, when it's just downright boring.
Yes, yes. 10% activity, 90% boredom.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's very true. Yeah, yeah.
So, did you come back knowing what you were going to do for your Royal Marines?
Well, I had. I had a couple of dozen really strong ideas. So again, I put my ideas together in a series of highly finished sketches, and then presented the ideas, go through the same process again, discuss it with the people that are paying me.
Persuaded them into your way of thinking.
Yeah, you swing them in, try and... Well, you must, I mean, that's you must. You must try and steer them. And they want your advice, for goodness sake. You know, I'm the artist, not them.
It's what you can do, I suppose, with that experience.
And they employ you because they want your angle on it. They want your view on it. They want to see what you find. I've learned that you mustn't be afraid of coming up with original, what you think are original ideas. You know, I mean. You go for the angles you want to go for, you know, because they'll know what you're talking about. They'll know exactly what you're talking about. I mean,
would these have been the sketches, your little ones here?
Yes, yes. I mean, those are sort of.
Yes, it gives really it's almost like a documentary account.
Sort of visual diary.
Is that
right?
A visual diary? Yes.
Yeah. So he paints useful stuff, actually.
Yes, and would they? Hopefully, you will present those all together, will you?
Yes, eventually.
Will they have those all together?
Well, I shall probably hang on to these sketches, but they will get exhibited and
as a series.
Yes,
one would hope so, because as you say,
and you can back them with a story as well.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, there's some base, gives the sort of Taliban. There's the top one there has got the little Taliban prayer. Is
yes,
it right?
It's a graveyard with prayer flags, Taliban prayer flags. And they're all. Again, it's this looking for local colour, looking for. You've got to pick up on all those little things, you know, that make it authentic. Because although I applaud painters that depict the horror of war and the ghastliness of war. I mean, I do sometimes as well. But there's a lot more. It's a much broader subject than just being horrified because somebody's, you know, been blown to pieces. You know, there's a lot more to war fighting than the death and that sort of immediate horror. You know, and I think probably if you're going to document war using painting, then I think you owe your audience a lot more than to just shock them. To be honest, I mean, I have been told in the past that that's the job know, we expect our artists to react emotionally to the situation, you know. Well, artists do all react emotionally to the situation, you know. Not only do you react to the horror and the rape and the murder, but you also react to the weather and the scenery and the way people work. You know, it's if all we can do is simply react to the horror. I mean, again, I don't think that's enough. Really, there's a much much wider story to tell than that.
Other war artists, you know, I think you said in the, you know, certainly the fort where you went to, there was no other war artists.
No,
but
no.
When you went the second time, did you hear of any other war artists there?
No. I mean, actually, I never run into war artists. You run into photographers occasionally, or you run into the odd BBC crew. But I think war artists... genuine war artists. I'm still slightly embarrassed at being called a war artist, you know. But I mean, war artists that go into theatre and work alongside the military are a pretty rare breed, I think. Well, they are. I mean, I know they are. I mean, and it's not everybody's bag. It's not something a lot of artists want to do, you know. And people are often saying to me, "You're either mad or you're very brave." But I don't think of it as being very brave. You just weigh the odds. That's what it's about, really. If you want to do this job, then you must weigh the odds and think, well, you know, are the odds in my favour? And if the odds are in your favour, then you might as well do it if you want to do it. There are times when you decide that the odds are not in your favour. You know, I really don't think I want to do this because there's a fair chance I might run into something that I can't handle, you know. But no, you've got to be very cold about it, I think, and think it through, and, you know. Bothers me when I hear stories of artists being selected to do jobs and just being dropped into situations without, as far as I can see, without very much preparation, really. Even a month's training before you go into something is doesn't prepare you for anything, I don't think.
Your sort of preparation, it seems to me, you know, covering your story from the Balkans and Eritrea and now Afghanistan, how quickly you've built up your sort of experience, expertise, your knowledge of, you know, and being so ill as well, how that, in a way, must have been such a lesson to you.
Yeah. I'm a fast learner. That's what
and
it
how
comes
you calculate
to
being polite to someone and spending 6 weeks in, you know, being ill, yes.
But providing you get away with it, you come out of it, then it was fine, wasn't it? It was part of the adventure. Yeah. The trick is to always come out of it laughing.
So the changes this second trip, you were saying there were obvious improvements at this time.
Yeah, I think all round.
Yes, this would be in the summer, June of 2002.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, still tough, harsh environment. But where I was operating and with the people I was operating, it was a little easier.
And your final painting, you know, the one that you were commissioned to do, what did that consist of, Gordon? Have you got any? Can you give me any idea here of what it was?
Well, boringly, it was similar. It was a painting of a convoy going through the mountains.
Yes, which I suppose was, you know,
which is
realistic.
What they were. It was illustrating what this particular group were doing.
And again, you had lots of others from, you know, as I've seen here with your series.
Yeah, the whole wealth of sketches and bits and pieces, and I always end up painting lots more just for me.
And I noticed you've got some lovely paintings of individual soldiers.
Yeah, well, I do those for myself. I do them for exhibition, but actually I paint them because I want to paint them because they're lovely subjects.
They are,
and
actually,
I absolutely love painting. Yes. You know,
so I was thinking of the camouflage colours. These are obviously designed by artists, aren't they? Camouflage.
Yeah.
And you know, this one of the soldier in the with the bottle,
the bottle
of water, is absolutely lovely.
And the camouflage is that's an interesting subject. Camouflage, to paint camouflage is a real problem because, I mean, camouflage is designed, whether it's a vehicle or it's a uniform or a weapon. I mean, you camouflage something to make it disappear into the background. It's quite simple. And then when you come to paint a picture of soldiers in camouflage uniform working in a landscape, if you paint them accurately, if you paint them as they are, they disappear. And this is something I hadn't dawned on me until I started this job. But the very first painting I produced, I was so careful about getting everything right, you know, and then I'd stand back at the end of a day's work, and although it was all there, I couldn't really see it, because camouflage works, you know what I mean? So I have to take liberties. I have to take a lot of liberties with the subject. So I have to change the light, I have to strengthen the shadows. You know, I have to put dark uniforms against light backgrounds. I have to do all sorts of things to take it from reality, move it from reality into a painting that somebody can understand and see. You know, so that's yet another problem. I mean, if you're painting on a white background or something, well, that's okay. But if you're doing an all singing, dancing painting. you've got to find ways of making things show up, even though they're designed to merge into the background.
That's so, really interesting point. That.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real intellectual process, painting.
Yes, there's a. I don't know whether you know. There's a big exhibition at the museum at the moment on camouflage.
Is there?
Yes, through the ages.
I must come and see
you
it.
Ought to come.
Norman
and
Wilkinson with his dazzle paint.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the ships.
Yes.
And the point you make, I don't know whether anyone else has spoken about this. It's very the fact that you have to be contrived in order.
Yeah, that's the word.
To cope with the camouflage.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I have to cheat to make it work, but I have to. You know, I have to cheat in such a way that nobody realises it, you know. So it can be a tricky balancing act sometimes, because you don't want people to be aware of what you've done. So you work with what the experts in the painting business called counterchange, and you must put your darks against your lights. And but I quite often really, from one side of a figure to the other, I will change the background from light to dark, in the hope that somebody, that people don't notice it. I mean, this portrait here,
it's lovely,
this Iraqi guy.
Oh, that's Iraqi, is it?
Yeah.
Yes.
You see, I have a dark background here
uh-huh.
to show up his white headdress.
Yes.
And then I have a pale background here to show up his darker skin.
Yes, I can
beard,
see.
You know.
Yes, how? Yes,
and, it's
and
all
that still keeps the integrity of the portrait, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah,
very much
yeah.
so.
But
in
it's not
adds to it.
Yeah, But it's just it didn't just happen. Do you know what I mean? You have you have to work it out. To how you can show your subject to its best advantage.
Yes, I suppose this is another difference between using just taking a camera picture, portrait.
Yes.
Compared with what you're doing.
If you just you photograph things quite often, they either end up all black and white almost, or things disappear and things merge, you know, because you haven't got the option to play with it and you know, work it so that it you can see what you've got, you know. So I'm doing that all the time, constantly adjusting.
So this is end of reel 12, Gordon Rushmer.